Blog Talk Radio.
Ray and Tay today. Yes, Sports Radio's on. Talking sports with friends, and you know we got it on. From the NFL to the NBA, MLB and college hoops do it all day. College football, we know who's number one. Understand, on the phones, you know we get it done. So call in 718-664-9098 and we'll give you more. Talking sports, yes we do.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. We hope you had a nice weekend, and thanks for listening and spending some time with us. We're Ray and Tay, and I'm Ray, Tall Rayside.
And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor, and we are part of the Final Four. It's finally here. Let's talk about it. Give us a call, 718-664-9098. Like always, shoot us your emails, rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. Check out the website, rayandtaytoday.com. Back episodes. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes, our YouTube page. Tweet at us, Facebook us. We're everywhere. The question is, are you going to Indianapolis? Oh, and listen, you know, it's just so wild, the controversy that's going on now in that state. We're not going to touch on it because we want to talk sports and have fun. So if you want to talk about your bracket or Final Four, again, give us a call, 718-664-9098. Ray, let's review and then we'll preview, talk and, you know, end with some NBA. But were you at any time yesterday thinking that Pitino was about to pull off, especially at the half, up eight, his greatest coaching job ever by beating Michigan State?
Well, you know, on our preview show, and what I've been saying all along on Twitter is you never bet against Izzo.
Yeah.
Now, you could say you never bet against Pitino also because he's well accomplished. You know, won that national championship at Kentucky, won the national championship at Louisville. That 98 team with Tubby Smith was basically his team. So you could argue he's got two national championships at Kentucky and one at Louisville. So Pitino knows what he's doing.
Oh, yeah.
And I actually thought that they were going to win that game during the game. Obviously, I predicted Michigan State to go to the Final Four. I did it before the tournament. I have it on ESPN. I'm on record. So as a neutral observer, but one who definitely respects both coaches and one who thinks that Tom Izzo is just phenomenal, especially in this situation where he takes these blue-collar kids and just gets the best out of them, I am surprised that they pulled it off. I actually thought, you know, deep into the second half, I thought this was Louisville's game. But tells you how this game of basketball, you can't be good on one side. You need to be both, you know, you need to be good on offense and on defense. You need to have balance, inside, outside, offense, defense. Now, there's some exceptions if you're really, really good on defense or you're really outstanding on offense, maybe. But this was a game where when you're playing from ahead, you need to be able to defend a little bit and score, you know, on half of your possessions and you win the game. So this was their game, but they couldn't hold the lead. They went to overtime, and then in overtime it was just Michigan and Michigan State, and then a couple of putbacks. And I don't know what Magic Johnson said to these kids, but he got in their ear, or somebody got in their ear, and hats off to Michigan State. But you know what? Like we talked about off air, in some ways, both of these teams had no business being there because this was not the best Louisville team that Pitino's had even in the last 5 years. He won a national championship 2 years ago. And definitely, as a number seven seed, this isn't one of the better teams, at least regular season-wise, that Tom Izzo's had. So both of these teams got a decent draw and were some degree overachieving, and take your hat off to either of these teams, but definitely to Michigan State for making it to the Final Four and proving Ray right.
76-70. You know, look, they are a team that is challenged. They do have some experience with, you know, Trice, Valentine, and Dawson. I think you saw where Dawson did not step up. You got a big game, you know, some real good help from Clark. Valentine gets his 15. Costello did, you know, pretty good before he fouled out. Dawson was amazing, though, with that tip. And, you know, I think what was so fascinating when you're watching a game is to see Michigan State in the second half with such confidence just slowly chip away and their defense just smother Louisville, where Louisville could not, you know, their best offense was, you know, Rozier chucking it up and he got that steal and had that breakaway. But, I mean, they really put the clamps on him. You know, Ellis did a little something. It was, a little bit from everybody. Forbes, you know, who scored, you know, big before in other games last season or whatever. I mean, you know, this year a little bit chipped in. So, it's fascinating with Michigan State that you never can count them out. And the way that they play, I honestly, and I sent this to you in a text, that they'll be able to fight with Gonzaga or Duke. And, you know, of course, we'll talk about Duke winning, but I really felt that they're so scrappy and with such, you know, they're so defensively savvy and just loose balls, whatever it is, that they'll be able to stay in a game. I don't know if they can score enough because with Duke winning, Duke, this might be one of their best defensive teams. So, look, you applaud Izzo, 12-15 towards the end of the season. They finally pulled it together. Dawson got healthy. They made this run. You know, it's just a tribute to him and away, you know, the Spartans go. And, you know, I'm just excited because I think when we tip off on Saturday, you got to believe that Duke will have to earn anything that they get to go to the championship game. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, we'll do an official preview, but, you know, Michigan State, if they lose, can this be thought of as a successful season? I think so. It's one to be proud of.
The fact
I think
that they're
so.
Here, yeah. Total
a number
success.
Seven seed.
Yeah, no, you can't. Only thing you can do is say, wow, Izzo did it again and got them to a seventh Final Four. Like you said, they won in 2000 with Mateen Cleaves and the Flintstones, and it's the only one he's won. But listen, they really played over their heads. So let's look at Gonzaga and Duke, man. You know, before we go forward, just to review Sunday and Saturday, you know, right off the bat, you got to applaud Gonzaga, their coach, you know, just the whole organization. Wiltshire and Sabonis, wow, they played their butts off. The guards struggled, but, you know, you can't expect so much out of them, I don't believe. I think having Karnowski, you know, getting that foul trouble threw them off a lot, and he just, you know, he had four turnovers, he had 4 points. It wasn't a big game for him. But, you know, Sabonis and Wiltshire, man, they really were tough. You know, I think Sabonis, it hurt him a bit getting that third foul right before the half. He should have been a little bit, you know, had a little bit more savvy, but he's young. He got frustrated. I think that this Gonzaga team, you know, they even had to go to Nunez, who's from Washington Heights, transfer from Louisville. I didn't know that. I forgot about him. So, you know, but at the end of the day, man, you just have to applaud Duke because, like you said on our preview on Saturday, you know, Cook and how he's developed and his savvy. He gives you 10. You get 16 from Jones, Okafor. I mean, the whole, you know, almost the whole starting five, Ray, had double figures except for, you know, you had, whatchamacallit, only had 9, Jaleel, you know. But still, I mean, Winslow with
funny,
the defense.
The National Player of the Year.
Yeah, I know. But see, that's the thing what's so great about them. And I told you, Winslow is, you know, Jones plays with a savvy that's not a freshman. Winslow is probably one of the best wings in the game because he plays both sides. And Jaleel, I think he'll score more, much more against Michigan State. But look, you know, Gonzaga threw so many guys at him and he couldn't get all the touches. You know, he only shot it 10 times, 4 for 10. So I think they played the game they had to play, and their defense is what won it for them. So I'm happy for Coach K. I think you're going to need to see, obviously, Jefferson and Plumlee, you know, banging against Michigan State and maybe Kentucky or Wisconsin. But This is a good team. They are a really good team. And the four freshmen, if you include Grayson Allen, they, you know, they do what they got to do, right? So what did you think about Duke? Were you surprised at how they were able to control it so easily towards the last 4 to 5 minutes and pull away?
I was a little bit. I tell you, the key to me, though, is Quinn Cook, really, because whenever you have a freshman in the backcourt in Tyus Jones, it's nice to have a running mate that's a senior. So it feels like he's the smallest guy on the court, but he gives them that upperclassman, you know, kind of calm about them. Kentucky seems to have a calm about them, too, and that's even more impressive when it's a bunch of freshmen and sophomores and Willie Cauley-Stein. We'll get to them in a sec. But Duke has this quiet, you know, maybe not so quiet, but air of confidence about them, and I think it helps that Quinn Cook is a senior, and he's been there.
Yeah.
He's been through the wars, and, you know, he's been on, you know, teams that have won a lot. So, to me, this Duke team has balance, and unlike Duke teams in the past, because of Okafor, they have size. Remember, we kept saying about Krzyzewski is he plays a very, I don't want to say dangerous, but he plays a very high-risk style in the tournament, right, with that shooting threes and relying on the outside shot, because he'll lose in the first round to Lehigh, remember that 2-15 seed, and then he'll beat Butler in the national championship. Now, granted, winning six games is tough regardless, but his style of play, that shooting jumpers, you can shoot yourself out of a six-game tournament and you can shoot yourself into a six-game tournament. But I think this year with Jahlil Okafor, they have balance. They have inside-outside, something that they really haven't had. I mean, even, what, 4 or 5 years ago when they won the national championship, it was like Greg Zubek and Lance Thomas. And even those guys, I mean, they didn't really have an inside presence. They had enough to beat a Butler team.
Right.
But really, that wasn't as balanced as this team. This team is super balanced. Now, they're
plus
running up against
superior defense. I mean, Cook plays D. Jones can play some. But Winslow, I mean, that in that wing, you know, they're a much better defensive team because Okafor is good inside defensively as well. So
and could you imagine if Suleiman wouldn't have been thrown off the team, that would have been another player to give them depth at the wing.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a great team. You know, a great job. It's this is going to be good, man. You know, this is one of those things where I think most of the nation is, you know, even at the end of CBS, once they got to the Final Four, even your boy Kenny Smith, he had to call him Duke instead of the school from Durham. Because this team, you know, and I said it on the other show, I don't like Duke. Can't stand him. Neither do you. We're Tar Heel fans. But you have to respect this team, and you almost kind of like them because of how they really play. You know, this is not a team that's easy to you know, they're hard to hate. It's not Leitner. It's not Hurley. It's not Ferry. You know what I mean? Like, this is a team where you're like, you know, these guys are, you know, you love Tyus Jones. Like, how could you not like that kid? I mean, you know, so it's fascinating. You applaud Coach K, the Dukies, Duke basketball, Duke Nation, you know, and away they go, Ray. Away they go. And back to another Final Four, which is just, you know, what can you say about him, man? And people are saying now, honestly, and you could argue this, that he might be the best coach in all sports. Popovich, Belichick, whoever, Doc Rivers, whoever, that Coach K, with the Olympic stuff and winning and college basketball, that he might be the best coach of them all. And that's hard to argue.
So, you know what puts him over the edge? And I never even thought about this until the very second, is the Olympics, is being undefeated in international play. Now, granted, he's got the most talented team, but it's a no-win situation, right? The U.S. is expected to win when you have LeBron and Kobe and D. Wade and Jason Kidd and Kevin Durant and all these guys. But without exception and to a man, everybody loves playing for this guy. And so Mike Krzyzewski may turn out to be, you might be right, may turn out to be the best coach of all time. I mean, there are some guys out there, right, that he needs to compete with. So it's Bill Belichick in football and Bill Walsh also in football. And then in basketball, Phil Jackson with 11, you know, NBA titles. But he did it at the college level and also did it on the Olympic level. You know, there's something to be said where he's in the mix. And if he wins his fifth national championship on Monday, wow, there's a lot to talk about. Hold on, we got a caller here. Let's see if the caller is – I think the caller is just listening. But a lot to talk about with this Final Four. So let's talk about this Kentucky game, and then we'll talk about our
preview.
Then we
got to
talk about preview.
Saturday was amazing. Let's hold off on Kentucky for 1 second. Let's talk about Arizona-Wisconsin because, you know, Frank the Tank and Sam Decker, and I said this on Saturday's show, and it proved to be right. I'm telling you now, Sam Decker, he doesn't have to come back for his senior year anymore. And this is what the tournament is about. And he is a 6'9 small forward that in today's NBA, the way the game is, it's a different NBA game. He can play in the NBA, and that kid can play on any team that I have. I love Sam Decker. He went off.
Is he Chandler Parsons who can defend a little bit?
He's Chandler Parsons. He might be. I think he's a little bit better offensively than Chandler, if you want to be honest. But I think he's leaving college with just as much in his toolbox as Chandler, and I don't think that's debatable. Decker is legit. His performance was legit. Obviously, Stanley Johnson and the contact and the scratch on the eye, I think it really killed Arizona's momentum. And they kind of, you know, Jefferson was holding it down for a minute. But with the foul trouble they were having and they couldn't, you know, TJ couldn't hit shots. It was hard for Arizona, I think, now Johnson came back. But it just, I felt like it messed up their rhythm. You know, Tarzewski didn't have the game that, you know, you thought he might have. He got you 11, but I was, you know, with the four fouls, it kind of just really threw things off. They had a ton of foul trouble. You're talking four or five from their top, you know, four out of their five starters when you're looking at the fouls. And that's rough. Ashley, you know, this is the thing with him, you know, shooting 5 for 8, but when he gets in foul trouble, then he disappears, you know, and it's hard. And I got to give Wisconsin all the credit. You cannot rip, and Gabe York played well, and I thought he had some clutch shots, hit that huge three. You needed something or more of something out of Pitts, you know, 1 for 7, or 0 for, you know, didn't really shoot at all in his 17 minutes. Sorry, 0 for 0. But that's the thing with Arizona, and I don't blame Sean Miller. They've kind of faced a team that in some ways was just a little bit better, you know, just a little bit better. So you got
to There's no shame in losing to Bo Ryan, Frank Kaminsky, who either he or Okafor will win National Player of the Year.
Oh, Kaminsky.
There's no shame in that, right? First-team All-American, this team is a really, really good team, this Wisconsin team. They may not win the national championship. We'll see what we predict a little bit later on in the show. But this team is really good. And there's a reason they're a number one seed. And there's a reason they're a top five seed. So Arizona playing great in the Pac-12 and coming in as a number five, probably number five or six overall seed in the country. Yeah, number two seed in the tournament and running up against the number one seed and losing in a tough four game, nothing to hang your head about. And all those Arizona fans saying Sean Miller never got to a Final Four, relax. Get off his back. He's on a better trajectory than Lute Olson, okay? He's doing fine.
They'll be cutting down the nets. Let me tell you, he recruits amazingly. The kids love him. You saw what TJ said. He was like, this guy was like a dad to me. I'm just so sorry that I didn't get him to the Final Four. And you got to love when you hear that from a kid. But when you have Kaminsky and Decker giving you 29 and 27, Ray, it's just, oh, man, too much, too much. Now, the question will be, and we'll talk about it going forward, Wisconsin, do they have enough bench? You know, that might be it, and they, you know, might hurt them going up against, you know, the two, you know, tanks and reinforcements. You're going to have to get more out of Jackson in 7 minutes because he's such a key to that team. But right now, you got to applaud Bo Ryan, what they did. That was an amazing game. And just, you know, listen, you got to love it. And not just that, look, he gets 5 boards, Decker. You know, the kid is kind of skinny, but he does everything. You know, he does everything. So let's talk about it. Notre Dame showed up, the 3 seed. They lose in OT, 68-66. I mean, not in OT, 68-66. But it might have been one of the most exciting games we've seen in college basketball in a long time. I thought it would be close. I thought Notre Dame could test them. Boy, I didn't think they'd test them like that. Zach August, Ray. I mean, come on, we gotta, you know, you gotta clap for Zach August. The game of his life, 20-9. He showed up. They got tired. Their legs were tired. Kentucky was perfect offensively and defensively the last bit of the game. Notre Dame sort of hit a wall. They couldn't score anymore. And a lot of that has to do with what Kentucky brings. And I do knock Mike Bray for not doubling down enough. Ironically, the one time he did double down on Karl-Anthony Towns, remember, it went out to Harrison. Harrison tried to penetrate, and he stepped out of bounds. And they needed to double down on Towns more to let him go off the way he did. I would have rather seen the Harrison twins or Ulis hit threes earlier in the game because they might not have done it. They did hit some clutch ones later on, but Towns to go off the way he did with 25 points, I think Bray might have made a little bit of a boo-boo there. But overall, listen, what could you say? It was a classic, and you said it, and I'm going to step on it and agree with you. This team, Kentucky, it is a team on both sides. No, they're not the greatest offensive team, but the savvy and clutchness from the Harrisons, from Towns, Cauley Stein as a junior, whether he's got to get a rebound, a steal, a tip in, or, you know, making Grant take that bad shot. Booker will do what he does. Ray, I love this Kentucky team. You got to love them.
I got to tell you what, this team is so unique. I don't know that they're the most talented team. Maybe they are the most talented team we've ever seen, like 1 to 10, right? But this team has several pro prospects, but we've seen a lot of teams with several pro prospects, the Duke teams, the Carolina teams, the UCLA teams, the, you know, some
Fab
of those teams,
five,
that,
yeah,
the UNLV, the Fab Five in Michigan and so forth. But I don't know that I've ever seen a team as unselfish as this team and plays truly, truly together. Because the Fab Five, you always knew Chris Webber was the man. UNLV, you always knew Larry Johnson was the man. Duke, you always knew Christian Laettner was the man, even though Grant Hill turned out a better pro player. But you knew that was Christian's team, right? And
yep,
every team, Kent Benson was the man on that undefeated 76 Indiana team. And Isaiah Thomas was the man on that 81 team. But who's the man on this team? Willie Cauley Stein is first team All American, but he's not even as good as Karl-Anthony Towns.
Well, Karl-Anthony Towns now is definitely the man. I mean,
yes and no. I mean, he is, but he is because he's the best. He's probably the best matchup that they have. But you can't really look at this team and say he's the leader of this team. He presents the most offensive problems. But remember, they take him out for offense, defense, substitutions. So this team really is the epitome of a team. And it's so funny because we kind of knocked the Atlanta Hawks in the NBA for this, which is, well, don't you need a star? Don't you need a go-to guy? Don't you need a guy that, you know, when everything goes down, you know he's the guy? And then maybe offensively that's Karl-Anthony Towns. But right now, you could argue the Harrison twins can carry this team for a little bit. Karl-Anthony Towns can carry this team. Defensively, Willie Cauley Stein can carry the team. The little point guard, Ulis, can carry the team for a while.
Booker
can carry the – and it's like this team really – it doesn't end. This team – and I'm surprised they won by 2, right? I thought they'd win by 15, and I give all the credit in the world to Notre Dame. This was not Kentucky playing poorly.
How
this
good is Grant? Can we just talk about?
And he's 6'5" too.
Ray, he's gonna be hard to guard in the NBA. Grant is nice. He's really he's better than Grant that's on the Sixers, his brother.
Okay, so you're saying he's the next Horace Grant for a point for you know a combo guard?
You know, listen, man, it's good to see.
His uncle? Because his father flamed out a little bit, right? He was the man in Oklahoma.
Harvey had two good seasons. I think two good seasons in the NBA. He played a little bit longer, but he had two good seasons.
With a bullet.
Can I ask you this, though? Are you surprised? This is what's so funny about Kentucky as they, you know, get ready to go to the preview. But real quick, this is what's scary, and they got two more games to play. The Harrison twins, neither one of them had double figures. If they have a better game, and just imagine if Trey Lyles plays to his potential. Like, he hasn't really, you know, he can score. He can do more than he's done. If Trey Lyles gets going, and then, you know, goodness gracious, you know, you still got Lee and Johnson off the bench with Booker, Ulis. I mean, I they haven't played their best game yet.
Well, that's what's
not
scary.
Not in a West Virginia game. Yeah, that's what's so scary about them.
That's what's scary is that this is only a tournament, a Final Four, if Kentucky doesn't play up to their potential. Because if Kentucky plays up to their potential, pack it in, go home, it's not a game, they win by 20 against anybody. Against Duke, and Duke's very, very talented, don't get me wrong, but if everybody plays up to their potential, Kentucky beats everybody by 20. So this is, but then again, they're freshmen and sophomores. You know, Willie Cauley-Stein is a junior, but for the most part, these guys are young, and so that's the one vulnerability they have. But I've never seen a team like this that is this well-rounded, this unselfish, plays D, doesn't really have a leader.
And they're ice
and
cold,
is,
right?
Is good.
They don't choke. They didn't get nervous.
They're
nothing. They are ice
no,
cold.
No, they're calm, cool, and collected. They have that old man confidence about them. You know what I mean? They're walking around like old men. Like
they look like
the
they
cats that
playing the goat, yo. They look like the cats that have
been to the park, right? And you know, you
– our boy Gary.
You're playing until 21 and you're down, let's say 17-10, but you're like, you know what? I'm all right because we can still run our pick and roll, our give and go, our pick and pop. The old man confidence, you know? He's like, don't worry, young fella, we'll be all right. And these kids are 17, not 17 anymore, but these kids are 18, 19, 20, and they have old man confidence. So in some ways, I really enjoy this Kentucky team, and it's really a pleasure to watch them. And they're not even running on all cylinders. That's the crazy thing. They've probably played, 38-0? They've probably played five really good games. And
can
the
I
other
tell you
game,
something? They make you, they make you like them and respect them. They honestly do. I'm not a Kentucky fan. I don't hate them like Duke, but I'm not a Kentucky fan. But this team, they have made me be like, you know what? Wow, this is what, you know, we kind of you try to rip young America and young kids for the technology and ADD, not focusing and not putting in hard work and not sharing, not understanding teamwork, just all the stuff that we could say about whatever this generation is, right? And Ray, they need to be applauded by all of America. I don't care if you're a Princeton or a Harvard fan. These kids, they deserve everybody's attention and respect next weekend in Indiana because it's beautiful. And they play a beautiful game because the Harrison twins, all these guys could get upset when they got to go to the bench, but they don't. They don't, you know, cry. They don't bitch. They don't whine. And Calipari, I love every press conference and every interview he has. It is hilarious.
You know, it's tough to keep these kids motivated, 38-0, and to not have their heads be too big. So, anyway, let's turn the page and
forward.
Go to preview to in Indianapolis.
Yo,
I still can't get over that commercial.
Listen, and, you know, a credit to Capital One for doing those spots with Spike, who's directed them, Sam Jackson, and Charles Barkley. They're really funny. I got to say, you know, even the hotel, checking in, it's fun. And that's what the Final Four should be about. college hoops, college sports. Everybody talks about what's wrong with the game. After watching this weekend, the tournament, and especially Kentucky-Notre Dame game, you feel like once they adjust a couple things, nothing's wrong with the game because it's all about the kids and competition, and that's never going to go away, and that's fine. So Michigan State-Duke, we're tipping off. It's going to be Saturday, 6:09. You're going to wish that you were sitting with T.O. and you had your popcorn ready because you're going to be entertained. When you see Izzo and Coach K, we've already talked about their records, what they've done, their accomplishments. It's Final Four with an ACC team, two Big Ten teams, and an SEC team. Three number one seeds and a seven seed crashes the party.
Three
and
first
Ray,
team All Americans. They just, by the way, they just announced the first team All American, the All American team. So Willie Cauley Stein is a first team All American. Frank Kaminsky's first team All American. Jahlil Okafor is a first team All American. So that's a big front court right there.
And the guards.
And the guards are D'Angelo Russell, also big, and Jerry and Grant. So you got a big team. You got 6'5", 6'7", and then 3 6'10" guys.
It's like the Kentucky starting lineup. That's the Harrisons. They're both 6'4", 6'5", so that's great. I'm gonna take a crack at it first, and I'm gonna say this: Dawson has to play. Valentine, Trice, their big three have to play. You're going to need to see Costello, Schilling, and Clark. Clark stepped up big in that Final Four game. I mean, an Elite Eight game. You're going to need it again. They're going to have their best game because Duke can score more than most teams they've played against and definitely much more than Louisville. I think where Michigan State is going to hit a wall is that if Trice can't get you his 20, and this kid has really developed into such a player, I could see Trice next year, you know, not a starter, but I could see that kid making a roster in the NBA because I love his heart. I love how scrappy he is. Same with Valentine. You love Izzo's kids because, you know, look at Draymond Green in the NBA now leading the Warriors with the number one seed, which we'll talk about later. It's just great. At the end of the day, Ray, it's too much Winslow, too much Okafor. I love what Cook and Jones can do. And I know Michigan State's going to be physical on these freshmen. And let me tell you, these guys, they're not, you know, they haven't faced physicality like they're going to get from Valentine and Dawson and Costello and these boys. You know what I mean? Duke. But I think Duke will have enough in them as freshmen that they'll be savvy enough, and Cook is going to be the difference in this game. He's going to have to step up, Plumlee off the bench, and you're going to have to see something from Emile Jefferson. But I think Duke will kind of – they'll pull away. Not like they pulled away against Gonzaga. Michigan State won't have that. But they'll win by 5 to 7 points, and Duke will take it 78-71. I think they'll get some points. There'll be some scoring in this game because there'll be some fouls. Michigan State doesn't shoot good from the free throw line, but they've been shooting, you know, pretty decently in the tournament. And Duke is going to the championship. I do like Okafor to definitely get over double figures. He'll give you a solid 16, and Krzyzewski will be in the championship game.
So I predicted a Duke in the championship game before the tournament, and I have to stick with that. I think Michigan State's run ends here. There's a reason they're a 7 seed and not a top 4 seed. They haven't played very well, you know, according to Michigan State standards. Now, the one thing that Gonzaga had is they had a couple of big men that could bother Okafor. I don't think that the Michigan State big men can bother Okafor, especially not on their offensive side, right? Because one of the things you'd want to do is get Okafor, either pull Okafor away from the basket,
right,
or get Okafor in foul trouble. And because Brandon Dawson isn't really playing that well and isn't really commanding that much respect offensively, he's barely scoring double digits. He's a monster on the boards, but he's not pulling his weight offensively as you would hope for a senior. I think this gives Jahlil Okafor the ability to really dominate this game. And I think that on the wings, when you're talking about all the guys you said, and especially Winslow and the guards, Cook and Jones, and the other Jones and Jefferson, and I just think that Duke has an answer for everything Michigan State has. Michigan State doesn't have an answer for Jahlil Okafor. And I believe that Travis Trice may get his, and Valentine may do okay, but I just don't think, and you said it before, I just don't think Michigan State score enough. So I think Duke wins pretty easily, actually. I think they pull away in the second half. I think Duke wins 82-69.
Ouch. Yeah, you know, you can't argue with that. In the nightcap, Ray, and I also have Kentucky and Duke in my bracket and in my championship game, I think it's what we've all looked for. But first, you're going to have a very, very highly contested second game, tipping off approximately 8:49 p.m. At this point, you might want some red wine or some beers, whatever it is. It's
some Kool-Aid. How about some Kool-Aid?
You can have
Mountain Berry flavored Kool-Aid.
You could even get you an Izzy. You know about them Izzys that they got at Chipotle? You can drink an Izzy. So I think Frank the Tank and Sam Decker and Hayes are going to be able to do what they need to do to battle with Towns, Lyles, Stein, you know, Johnson, Lee, you know, all of it. They can do some things. The thing that they don't have that helped Notre Dame against Kentucky is Notre Dame, without Zach August, they've got four of the guys that could sort of shoot, pass, dribble, handle the ball, all those things. Where Wisconsin, they're big guys. Yeah, they're big guys. You know, Decker and Kaminsky can go inside, outside. But Cauley Stein's athletic enough to go out there with him. So is Trey Lyles. You know, Towns, he'll kind of stay inside, whatever. But their guard play is not strong enough. This is why you need more than 7 or 10 or 12 minutes from Jimmy Jackson's son, Trayvon Jackson, Trey Jackson. Trey Jackson needs to go in the, barometric chamber or whatever. He needs to get healthy.
He needs to do a TO?
Yo, he needs to do a TO this week, quick, fast, get 110%, get some B12 shots. He needs to do it all, Ray, because he is going to be the key for them to shock the world and get this upset. But I just don't think it's going to happen. At the end of the day, it's too much defensively, I think, for Wisconsin, even though they'll be able to score because they're talented scorers. But Cauley Stein, they'll put him on Decker. If they have to, they'll put, you know, Lyles on Frank the Tank, whatever they got to do. And I think that they, inside, they cannot stop Towns. I'm looking for Lyles to finally score some more. Booker, when he comes in, I think he'll be able to get off. And I'll be interested to see. I think the Harrison twins can take advantage of Gosser and just their guard play. So, to me, it's not the right matchup in terms of what Notre Dame did. And I think at the end of the day, Kentucky is going to start to play better. And I think both the Harrison twins might finally get you in some double figures. And Towns is not going to go off with 25. He'll be more at 18. But Kentucky wins 81-74. Seven, 8 points. Not a blowout, but they'll be able to control it and win comfortably at the end. Kentucky goes to the championship.
This is one of those where it's the immovable force versus the unstoppable object, or whatever that phrase is. The unstoppable force against the immovable object. Kentucky is basically the best team in the nation defensively, and Wisconsin is the most efficient team in the country offensively. So what gives? Right? Best offense versus best defense. Now, usually what happens is it's the opposite that determines it, right? It's how will Kentucky's offense do against Wisconsin's defense? And in this case, I think that Kentucky has found something in getting the ball to Karl Anthony Towns, Booker playing off of him, Euless playing off of him, the Harrison twins doing their thing. I think ultimately what happens is that Wisconsin, like you said, their strength is their forwards, are their forwards. So Hayes, Kaminsky, and Sam Decker. Now, Kentucky has five players to guard those three, right? They've got Dakari Johnson and Lee coming off the bench, and they've got Karl Anthony Towns, and they've got the best defender in the country in Willie Cauley-Stein. And so they can basically take them. Not only do they have the bodies, they have the fouls, they have the length, they have the athleticism, and I just think it's too much. It's too much. So they're able to contain Wisconsin's, you know, big three, but I think in addition to containing them, they're able to shut down the other players. So that combination to me is just is too much. It's too much. And they're a team of destiny. They don't want to go 38-1. So I think Kentucky wins this game. Now, Kentucky hasn't been blowing anybody out. So because they haven't
except
been blowing anybody out. Well, except for, right, except if you talk about them.
Yeah.
Then they'll blow you out. Then they'll hold you to 39 and blow
that's
you out. But other than that, they're not really blowing anybody out. So I do think it'll be a close game, and I don't know that it'll be that high scoring either. So like you, I think it's a close game. I think they win something like 74-68.
Okay.
And
well,
again, a Kentucky-Duke final.
Kentucky-Duke final, which is, you know, hey, what we had in our brackets way back when. And, you know, it's going to be fun. It's definitely going to be fun. Before we leave college hoops, your boy Rick Barnes was let go from Texas. He's already looking like he's going to get the Tennessee job. St. John's is trying to offer the job to pull in Chris Mullin. A lot of people are questioning if that's the right move because, you know, Mullin hasn't coached. He's GM and all these different things with Sacramento and the Warriors, been around the game. When you look at Texas, and everybody's talking about Greg Marshall and Shaka Smart, if you had to bet, do you think either of those guys leave their sort of mid-major programs to go to Texas, a football school, and can St. John's really reel in Chris Mullin, or should they go for more, you know, maybe if they could get Mark Jackson, or should they go for just a coach, not somebody famous in St. John's history? Could they
well,
go
Mark
for
Jackson is both.
Well, no,
you
no.
know, Mark Jackson is a coach, and he's from, you know, St. Albans, the pride of Bishop Lachman High School. So I think Mark Jackson is the guy they should get, and forget Chris Mullin. Now, Chris Mullin's obviously the best St. John's alum out there, and he's the best player in the school's history, and you know, along with Patrick Ewing, probably in Big East history. But does Chris Mullin want to coach? I mean, he was a GM before, and then he's going to want to come back and coach in college? I mean, I can understand what a guy like Kevin McHale did, where he was a GM first, and you know, had moderate success, and then tried it again, and then went down
to
the coaches.
I can't see him wanting to do it right.
Yeah, I don't get it. Maybe it's just me, but I don't see Chris Mullin coaching. Mark Jackson,
how about our
on the other
boy?
Hand.
How about our boy Zendon Hamilton, who is on Ray today?
Well, he just started in the coaching game, so I don't know if he's ready to be the head coach at St. John's. But he could certainly one day be a head coach. He could, you know, intern, if you will, or be an assistant coach, be a lead assistant for a while, and then get his job. Look,
listen, you want
Texas
that program.
Job,
you want that program to get somebody that can really recruit, because it's hard to recruit in New York City, a sports town for professionals, and St. John's doesn't have the facilities that other schools have in comparison. It's not Syracuse. You know what I mean? It's going to be kind of hard. We'll see. But what do you think about Texas? Would you think Greg or Shaka go to Texas?
I do. I think the money that those Texas boosters and that Longhorn network and just the residue from football helps
their
basketball.
The spillover, right? That's
Rick
still over
Barnes,
tonight.
We remember Rick Barnes from Providence. Rick Barnes was there for 17 years.
He had a good run.
He had a
Marcus
good run.
Marcus Aldridge, Reggie Freeman, Kevin Durant.
Kevin Durant, yep, sure.
He had a lot of guys from New York that went down there. Terrence Wrencher. I mean, he really, I think he did
Royale
well.
Royale Ivy? He's been in the league for years.
I interviewed Royale on Hard to Guard. Yeah, Royale is the man. Royale with cheese. So I think
that Kentucky job, they can throw a lot of money. Now, the downside for a Shaka Smart and for a Greg Marshall is that you're leaving a basketball program and a place where you're loved, and you'll always be second fiddle. Even if you win a national championship
always.
At the University of Texas
always.
At Austin,
Texas
they'll still ask,
football,
well, when is spring practice starting for the football team? You know?
Basically.
So that's the downside, and that would be the one reason not to go there. But they're going to throw a lot of money at you. You're in a lot of – you got a lot of alumni out there. You got a lot of support, not as much as the football program, but it's an interesting job. I think one of those two will leave and take that job.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on that. Real quick, before we get to the NBA, just some little football notes. I wanted to throw at you what you thought about the fact that we haven't touched on Playgate yet, but they announced for the Falcons and the Cleveland Browns, with Ray Farmer for the Browns, the GM, 4 games. Looked like people were saying he's taking the bullet for the owner, suspended 4 games. Not a big deal. You know, maybe he can't sign some guys from the practice squad for the first 4 weeks or old veterans, but somebody else will do it. He just can't do it. So that's kind of silly. And then with the Falcons, McKay can't be on the competition committee anymore, whoop-de-doo, and then a fifth-round pick. I feel like
the noise.
Yeah, you know, the NFL sometimes. I don't know, you know, and we'll be interested to see what happens with the Flategate. We'll get back to NFL talk next week. Wednesday, we're coming back with our MLB preview. We'll talk about everything. You know, today the Cubs dropped down Chris Bryant to the minor leagues so that they could get
Which
that extra
ridiculous.
Year.
That's all about the money, right? They'll bring him up in 2 weeks.
About that contract.
Save a year
right?
of arbitration.
Yeah. It's, you know, listen, you got to do what you got to do. So let's talk NBA. We've been talking all March Madness. I mean, look, a ton of teams in the East have made the playoffs already. The top 4 seeds, Atlanta, Cleveland, Chicago, Toronto, looking like it's going to finish in that order. Toronto has really dropped off. So have Washington. They're now, you know, solid in the 5th seed. Toronto's solid at the 4. They've been playing horrible without Lowry, Bradley Beal in and out. Both these teams are struggling. You almost don't know who could win that 4-5 matchup. But I wanted to find out what you think about that last group. Seems like Miami will, you know, hold on and get that 7. But Ray, Brooklyn right now is 8. Boston 9, Indiana 10, and Charlotte 11. And they are all basically a game within each other. Who do you think, with 7 games and some teams 8 games remaining, who's going to pull it out in the East to get that 8th spot? Is Brooke Lopez going to lead the charge?
Can you find me a 4-headed coin? Because I really need to just flip a coin, except that coin has only got 2 heads on it. So this is ridiculous. I mean, first of all, let's recognize. Yeah, exactly. Let's recognize that even Brooklyn, that's 7-3 in their last 10, they're 32-40. So the team that wins is probably going to have 38 wins. Right, so you're gonna have a sub 500 team for sure.
Trying to say this. Utah Jazz would still be alive in the East, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh my God. Yes, the Utah Jazz, exactly, 28 games behind Golden State in the number 1 spot. So, I really think that the best team on paper is still Brooklyn, just because.
Yeah.
You know, of Brooke Lopez now starting to play like a manimal. Have you seen his stats? The last 6 or 7 games, he's averaging what we've always wanted him to average. We're like, look, you've got all that talent. We want you to average 28 and 10 and 4 blocks.
Yeah.
So You know what? Maybe you go.
But it does go to show about health, though, Ray. You know, if you're not healthy and your feet hurt, look at Durant, 4 to 6 months now. Look,
yeah,
Lopez
yeah.
has not been healthy, and neither was Darren Williams, and the team is finally starting to get healthy. And poor Joe Johnson, he's been carrying them the whole year by himself, him and Jared Jack. These guys could be actually dangerous in the Eastern playoffs. Brooklyn could give Atlanta all they want.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Hold on, we have a caller. Let's put the caller on the air.
Yeah.
Hello, caller. You on Ray and Tay?
Hey, what's up, fellas? How you doing? This is Hank.
Oh, it's Big Hank. What's up, man?
Hey,
what's up, Hank?
Just about the NBA, you guys comment on the pros and cons of changing the playoff format that's being proposed about essentially, regardless of whether you're East and West, just have the top teams seed because
right.
there's such, you know, there's such a big discrepancy between East and West, and it's not fair to the you know.
And it has been that way for the last 15 years. We always said, oh, it'll balance out. And then when LeBron, you know, came up and went to the East, we thought, oh, the balance of power is going to be – it's been this way for 15 years. So, you know,
yeah,
everybody that said, oh, it'll work itself out, it has.
But you have to do it before the season starts, right, for
no,
a balance.
No, of course, of
yes,
course.
Definitely. But I'll say this. There have been proposals for doing it, and I don't have a problem with it, just the top 16 teams. You know, because, you know, New Orleans and Phoenix are pretty good teams with some good players that, you know, they're almost, you know, they're both above 500. So they should be in the playoffs. And, you know, if those two were in there, then you would, you know, clip off, you know, the last two in the East, which would be Miami and Boston, which, you know, hey, let's be honest, they might not be deserving of being in the playoffs this year. And going forward with Miami without Bosch, they're not going to be much of a challenge, even though people think they might win a game eventually against Cleveland. But how about this, Tank? This is another way to look at it. What if you actually did some potential maybe realignment, which some people have talked about, where you actually took New Orleans, maybe Memphis, and you know maybe one more Eastern Texas team, maybe Houston, that they're more east, you know, more on the east side. And maybe you switch them with, you know, I don't know, Detroit, Milwaukee, and whatever. But, you know, that's a thought where you actually trade two for two, and it might balance it out a little bit better. At the end
well,
of the
that's
day,
interesting.
I'm open to a lot of things. But I think it'd be fascinating to see right now Memphis and New Orleans in the East would definitely make the East five, six, seven teams deep. Right, so it'd be really balanced now, in terms of having
yeah,
good.
Yeah, I think the reason why you would want to do that, Eric, is just because, you know, the regular season is really weighted to the East advantage, also, right? I mean, if you're playing the East, yeah, you make two road trips, you know, to the West Coast or whatever, but you essentially play Western teams, you know, four times a year, basically. Right? You know, so it's even more skewed because if you're an Eastern team, you're basically playing nobodies and your records are inflated. Or, you know, as opposed to, you know, you make a good point about like the Phoenix of the world where, you know, Phoenix travels, you know, basically, you know, in the Western Conference and, you know, and within 5 hours, basically all the powerhouse teams and puts them at a disadvantage. So I think if you wanted to change the playoff format, I think you'd probably have to also change the regular season format to make it more even, where East teams and West teams play in a more balanced, you know, on a more balanced basis to make it more fair.
You're right.
Oh, no.
You're right, Hank. They have to go hand in hand for sure. Just like, I mean, baseball's an even more extreme example where you play 19 games against your division. Right, they have that uneven schedule because they wanted
right.
you to really earn. If you're the AL East champion, well, then you got to play the AL East teams, you know, 85 of your 162 games. But I will say this. The one thing that I am hesitant to throw it all away is there is something to be said for allegiances, you know, the All-Star game and the East versus West and the winner of the East, and we're the winners of the West, because then if it's a 16-team round robin, there's no, you know, there's no, it's just the league of 30 teams, you know? Where do you have rivalries?
There's
where
no
do you
border
have,
wars. You like border wars.
I do. You know, we grew up in the 80s with Boston, L.A., right? And that's the whole reason they did 2-3-2 because of that coast-to-coast travel. But there was something to be said for that, right? The Eastern Conference versus the Western Conference. So I'm still hoping that this thing works itself out. Now, it hasn't in 15, 20 years. The West has been dominant,
right.
You know, maybe since Tim Duncan got there. But
well, maybe the best way is just to do the realignment.
Trading
like
teams
I said.
sounds. I think that's the best idea. I think that's the best idea.
No, because right now, you just switched. Imagine if you just switched Houston and Memphis, or New Orleans and Memphis. That's really two good teams that you could trade over for. I don't know if you really looked at the map of the United States. Maybe what, Indiana and Milwaukee?
Yeah.
You know. I mean, so that would make a huge difference.
Detroit
or, you know, whatever
and Milwaukee,
you
maybe?
Or Detroit and Milwaukee. So, I mean, hey, listen, there's a lot that can be done, but just a simple switch like that, that changes a whole lot too, right? Because then the East becomes seven deep, you know? And you got to believe these other teams are going to start to get better because they've been having high draft picks for a while. Orlando's building a young team. Charlotte, you know, Boston, maybe Philly, maybe in a couple of years, New York, maybe they start to sort of, you know, recycle and get better. So, you know, we'll see how it works. Hey, Hank, so yeah. I want to ask you this. The West has been fascinating just watching, you know, look, they're all juggling for seeding, right? I mean, you already see five teams have clinched, you know, basically OKC is going to probably hold on to that eighth spot. But when you look at the playoffs and OKC not having Durant, you almost feel like anybody could win any round in the West. But with Memphis struggling the last couple of games and dropping down to the three seed, do you really feel as if anyone can stop the number one seed Warriors if Bogut stays healthy the way that they have looked all season with such a strong home court advantage? Could they just really just make it through to the finals?
The reason why I'm hesitating is because I think in the playoffs, the game really slows down.
Yeah.
And you're right about Andrew Bogut, right? When the game slows down, you really need a big man, you know, just frankly, forget about offense, but also defensively. You know, you're going to need – forget about protecting the rim, right, because all these teams can run, but – when you slow this, you know, let's just say if I wanted to play defense against the Warriors, right, I know you have great shooters, so that, you know, automatically spreads out how I want to defend them. But if you have Bogut, who is a legitimate threat down low, it makes your job much harder. I actually don't think that the Warriors are a team that is destined for the finals, only because I think if I'm a coach and I'm playing them, I try to slow things down at a snail's pace and try to wound them inside, and I think it's possible. The problem is most teams are not built for that, right? I mean, they're really not. I mean,
just the Spurs probably.
The only teams that are really built for that, frankly, are the Rockets and Memphis.
And the Spurs.
That's it. I mean, the Spurs have a big man, but they don't really dominate teams inside anymore, right? They don't. That's not what they do.
Right.
So I would not actually. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that they're automatically in the finals. I don't think.
I
so
agree with that, and I would
I
say
agree.
even more that, you know, I don't think they're built. They're built to win in the regular season. I'm not sure they're built to win four series. You know, the Splash Brothers get a lot of their threes on, you know, spacing and transition and offensive execution coming down out of a make or a miss on the other side. And I just, like you said, the game slows down. So they're going to have to out-execute you, you know, Jerry Sloan style, if they're going to win. And if they can do that, then kudos. Then they deserve to be there. I'm just not sure that when it gets to be chest on chest, man on man, and the game is, you know, 86-84, that's a game that Golden State feels comfortable playing.
So then
yeah,
is this a year? Let me ask you this then. So is this a year where in the West, let's say the Spurs, they're looking good again, but let's say they just might run out of energy. You don't like how the Warriors play. OKC's injured. Is this a year where a Dallas, Houston, or Memphis can break through, almost surprisingly, to the finals?
I would say this. I don't think Memphis can do it to break through. I think that Houston can break through only because, you know, if there's ever a time where Dwight Howard's going to be fresh, this is kind of it, you know. He's just starting to play again.
Right.
So I think that they could actually surprise some people only because James Harden is just unstoppable. And if Howard has any kind of offensive game at all, now would be the time where...
You think they'll miss Beverly?
Huh?
Because Beverly might not get back with that wrist. You think they'll miss Beverly? He's sort of their defensive pit bull.
I actually think Beverly, you know, Beverly reminds me a lot of James Harden when James Harden was on OKC. It's a shame that, you know, he's got this wrist injury. Because I think he's a budding star that is going to have to leave that team in order to get paid and be the man. So am I confident in saying that about Houston? Absolutely not, which is actually why we all just need to stay up late and watch these games in the Western Conference because
it's going to be great.
You know, yeah.
You know, it's
funny.
We didn't even talk about the 4-5 matchup. We didn't even talk about the Clippers and Portland.
Portland and Clippers.
Two teams
yeah.
that we were just expecting to make moves at the free agent deadline. Portland loses Wes Matthews, but they've, you know, stepped up since then and recovered from that injury. And that team, if they whoever wins that matchup, you know, gets Golden State in the second round. And I might just go out there on a limb and say that team might beat Golden State and get to the Western Conference Finals.
Well, definitely if it's the Clippers, I think Portland is going to miss Wes Matthews. I really do. But this, I was going to say, this could be Chris Paul's best chance. It really could be.
Well, he needs to, right? This is, what, his 10th year, 11th year? It's about time Chris Paul made a run deep into the playoffs.
It'll be
fun. I kind of feel bad. The reason why we're not talking about the Clippers is because, or frankly, Portland for that matter, is the one thing you have to be in the playoffs is you have to be consistent. You can't say, oh, you know, the Clippers on their best day can beat anybody. Well, yeah, that's true, but, you know, that's why they're 5-7 game series. I just don't see them consistently putting 3-4 games against an opponent where they can actually win. I'm talking about winning the second round.
Who do you trust
about
the
winning
most?
The second round.
Is it the Spurs that you trust the most? Because we've seen them do it?
Listen, I've been saying for the last 3 years that they're too old and they're tired and they're not going to last through a grueling playoff season. And I've been wrong, right? So,
yeah.
Shame on me, right? Who says they're going to get tired?
Yeah.
They should have been tired 3 years ago. So who says they're going to get tired this year?
Well, look, and Tal's favorite, Ray's favorite player, Kawhi Leonard, is finally starting to play like he wants to be an all-star towards the end of the season.
Like he wants that contract. It's amazing how these cats play the last year of their contract.
Well, listen, he hasn't played great the whole season, but, I mean, what, the other night he had like 25 and 11 and 4. I mean, he's starting to do it. Hank, real quick, before we end the show, 4 guys, 1 trophy, 1 award. Curry, Harden, LeBron James, or Russell Westbrook, who, by the way, the only player in the last 20 or 30 years for a month to average 10 and 10 has been LeBron, and Russell has done it for February and March.
So you're asking me, are you asking
who's your
me,
MVP?
Who's my MVP or who,
yeah.
who do I think is going to win? Win it.
Oh, well, if it's different, let us know. If it's different, let us know both.
Okay. If I had to pick an MVP this year, I think if I had to pick an MVP this year, if it was Henry Mitchell's MVP award, it would be – no, because it's not, right? So,
no, I'm just laughing the way you said it. That's all.
If it was Henry Mitchell's MVP, I would pick James Harden. And here's why.
Yeah.
And here's why. If James Harden is not on that team, they're the Lakers.
Oh, yeah.
They're the Lakers. I mean, they don't have...
Definitely.
They don't
With
have...
With Dwight Howard missing most of the season? Yeah, for sure.
Howard's missed a ton of games.
But if you're asking me who has been the best player this year, I think I have to go with Steph Curry. And I think he's going to win it. No disrespect to LeBron James.
Yeah, everybody loves Curry, and they're tired of LeBron and Russell Westbrook. They're only the eighth seed and da-da-da-da-da, not enough games. But to me, you know what? I think Curry has got a team that is loaded. And I love him, and I think he's great. And he's just a magician with the ball. But like you, I would go with Harden. But, I mean, what I've seen out of Russell Westbrook, he is, and I said this to Ray from last year's playoffs and kind of re-felt it the night of the All-Star game. He is the most uncontrollable dominant force in the NBA other than LeBron. And what this kid has done this year is Oscar Robinson-esque. You know what I mean? It's amazing. So Russell should get it.
I think, Russell makes a good argument. I just wish he would have done it consistently the whole year.
He missed 17 games. And then the other question is, philosophically, can you give an eighth-place team the MVP? Can you give a player on the eighth-place team? We got to look that up. We got to get our intern back. Where's our intern? Get our intern back.
Yeah.
We need to ask him, has anybody on the eighth-place seed ever won the MVP?
I bet you Oscar probably has. His teams were never that good.
But eight in the conference? Maybe. I don't have that information in front of me. But that's my only thing about Russell Westbrook. Because if you said for the second half of the season, Russell Westbrook runs away with this award, if he had James Harden's record and James Harden had their record, I'd say, again, Russell Westbrook wins the MVP. But I think the voters will have a problem. The other interesting thing we'll see is I don't remember the last time that you could make a legitimate case in we're at the end of March. So in, let's say April 1st, that there's four guys who could win the MVP. So it'll be very interesting to see if there's a regional element to this voting, like the Heisman, you know, four guys are going to be splitting votes because you can make a legitimate argument for all four of them. And Anthony Davis.
Oh, by the way, LeBron's been pretty amazing since he came back from his little vacation rest.
Right, and I think that he'll get a knock for that. Right, it's one thing if you're injured, but if it's another thing, if it's like that, like you said, vacation rest, like the Greg Popovich rest. But it's very interesting to see after the fact if there was a regional element to this voting.
No, you're right, and you know, this is why all you callers on the East Coast, you know, you have to stay up late and watch what's going on in the Western Conference. I know it's a pain in the ass.
It's amazing. Yeah, amazing.
I mean, because you make a fair point. When you have a tight competition for MVP and three of the guys are basically on the West Coast, just suck it up and make sure you have a pot of coffee brewing the next morning because it's worth your time. You may not see this again. This may not happen, right? Harden could be traded. You know, these guys could get traded.
You know what's the best thing to watch, Hank? Damian Lillard any night. Damian Lillard is absurd. Oh, man. So, listen.
All right.
Hank, great call. Great show.
Yeah, man.
And you know what? Wednesday, Hank, check us out. MLB preview. We're going to break it all down. It's time for baseball. It's back. You smell the grass? I know it's kind of cold out there, but do you smell the grass?
Take care, fellas.
All right. Be good, Hank. Thanks for the call.
All right. Great show. Ray and Tay, Kentucky versus Duke. It's what it comes down to, Ray.
Yep. We're out. We'll see you on Wednesday talking some baseball.